You're listening to WWBC Coco, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Coco, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7, as well as online everywhere on God's magnificent, beautiful planet. What a pleasure it is to wake up every day breathing, of course.
Amen. Amen. Yes, right here on 1510wwbc.com. You can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, you can also get all of our archive shows there. You just have to pick the date each and every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m. under Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Of course, there we share it on all of our social media channels, as well as all the pictures and bios of all of our great guests. And then we share it on our website as well, which is sitamediainc.com. We had 295,000 emails last week.
Downloads, you mean?
Downloads.
Yeah, if it was emails, I wouldn't be alive.
I would jump off a bridge.
I'll fall down.
I meant downloads, yes.
Thank you so much, Ellen. You know, people often ask me about the show, and I couldn't do the show without you. That's the voice of Ellen O'Neill, my co-host, and my right hand for the show. And then Allie is here, Allie Tambor. She's a friend of the show that comes by to cheer us on Mondays. We give her something to do. She's retired. She looks forward to it. And that's good. And of course, Danny is running our board. For our listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends for the first time, I am Sita Biggie, and we've been on air for 15.5 years. The noise you're hearing today is that of the roofers who are washing the roof because I guess they're pressure washing it to get it ready for a new roof or
that's
something.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, it's amazing. When I see roofers in the hot sun, the first thing I think about is, I hope they have health insurance.
Really?
For some reason, my brain just goes right to health insurance, housing, childcare, whatever it is that people need to make a living so that us mortals could benefit from their skill, which is they're really on top of a roof running around there. That's dangerous stuff. So anyways, with that being said, our show today is going to be fabulous. For the listeners who are tuning in for the first time, we talk about things here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, whether people want to learn how to save money, whether people want to learn how to make money. I'm not saying like make your own bills, you know, but learn to work. We talk to folks who want to talk about writing a book, why they wrote a book. Some people are artists, some people are singers. We talk to many people with nonprofits. We speak to folks who vote. We tell them why it's important to get involved in their community. And we speak to people who turn their passion into profit as well, like the folks that we venture that we've had on. Today is no different. We've got a repeat guest, my good friend. I tell you, DC Paget. I reached out to DC because our scheduled guest is sick and could not come in. And sometimes illness is not something we want in our studio. And DC is a semi-retired machinist. Yeah, for the trade shops, right? And he started beekeeping 10 years ago. And it's amazing that his club right here in Brevard County, Florida, the South Brevard Beekeepers, has grown. And people are learning so much about these cute little bees and what they do for us humans. Our second segment is going to be with a lady that I met actually Saturday. Anne is here. And Anne, tell us again how you say your last name.
Marouz.
It's M-R-U-Z. Marouz.
Right.
And it's beautiful. I just love the way she says it. I met Anne Saturday night, and it's just the universe was lined up that she'll be here today. She is the founder of the Democratic Club in North Brevard, is it?
I am the co-president of the North Brevard Democratic Club. I'm not the founder.
Right. But you know what? I've never heard of a club surviving up there, and you guys are doing it. So that's wonderful. And so Anne will talk to us later about she's done so many things in her life, and one of them is she's a coach, a coach that talks about dementia, and she's an RN. She's worked in so many institutions all over the United States, and we'll talk a little bit with her second segment. And yes, we'll talk a little bit about the formation and her being the co-president of the club in North Brevard. So, but without further ado, DC, bring us up to speed. Tell our listeners a little bit about why you got started in the beekeeping business and how long ago and your mission statement.
Well, 10 years ago, I really didn't want to do bees. I had no interest in bees. But the former pastor of the church, he got bees, and typical of new beekeepers, they wanted to tell everybody about their bees and their passion. And he kind of got on me a few times, and finally I said, okay, I'll go play with your bees for an hour or two and see what happens. And got in the beehive, and it's like, this really is fascinating. And then as I got into it more and more, I found out that I've got a God-given knack for working bees. I found that I can open a beehive up, and within just a few minutes, I can tell you if something is wrong with the beehive. And so it extended from there. We formed, about a year after I started beekeeping, we formed a local club, South of our Beekeepers. There were three of us got together and did that. And we wanted to make it easy for anybody to join, so we established it that we would find a way to make our annual payments. We had to buy an insurance policy, had to pay corporation taxes. It's about $700 a year. So we were going to come away to do that without charging dues. That's what we do. We take donations. We make sure we pay our bills each year. And anybody who wants to come play with bees with us is welcome to come play with bees with us. We make you a member.
Right. And where do you guys meet once a month?
Okay, we're sponsored by Christian Life Church in Palm Bay. It's off Emerson Drive. The address is 343 Nail Street. We're there every Sunday afternoon from about 2:30 to 4 o'clock, depends upon the weather. And we'll open a couple beehives up. And anybody who wants to can come out. We'll put you in a bee suit, and you can open a beehive up. And if you've never been stung, I can fix it.
Yeah. Right. And what a wonderful it is thing for you to be doing that with the church, so that the people, the congregation there, I'm sure they have family members, children, that you could teach them about what you're doing.
Yeah, I have a few that come out. And I will work with children. And people ask me about that, too, if I got an age limit in the apiary. I let the parents kind of decide that themselves. You know, do you feel that if your child gets stung by a bee, are they going to go really crazy and run around and possibly cause other problems, or do you think they can handle it? If the parent thinks they can handle it, I'll let them come in. The youngest I had was a 5-year-old girl. We put her in a bee suit, and I gave her the hive tool, and she took every frame out of the box, and she just had a blast.
Yeah, and with your machinist background, I assume that comes in very handy for you with what all these gadgets that you guys needed for the bees.
Yeah, I started doing bees. The very first thing I came up with was a thing called frame fingers, because the first time I got in a beehive, the guy was teaching me. He took a frame out and he leaned it up against the side of the beehive. And I wasn't paying attention. And I kicked it, and about 100 bees crawled up my leg. And about 10 seconds later, I got about 30 stings in my left calf. Because I just wasn't paying attention. And so that night I went home, actually drew up a pair of little frame fingers. They're little hooks. You can keep them in your pocket and hang on the side of the beehive. So when you take that first frame out, you can put it right there. You're not going to step on it or kick it. And then my second year of beekeeping, I started playing around with raising queens. So I developed a little calculator disc for people raising queens. It sets a disc on what day you graft larvae and when the queen should be emerging and when she should let mate and whatnot. And then there's a grafting tray. So people that raise queens, they'll take a frame of freshly hatched larvae, and they'll take a little plastic tool and they'll scoop a larva out of a cell and stick it in a little plastic cup to put in a queen cell builder. And most of them that do this actually operate in their truck. So I developed a grafting tray that folds up. You can hang it on the steering wheel in your truck, and you can graft queens. When you're done, you fold it in half, and you slide it under your seat.
Perfect. Yeah.
And all this is made out of iron?
Aluminum. Lightweight aluminum. Yeah.
Okay. I know Allie had some questions she was asking you about bees earlier. Go ahead, Allie.
Oh, yeah. How do you get a new queen, you know, without waiting for one of the worker bees to, you know, to nurse one into existence?
There are several registered queen producers in the state of Florida. So if you if one goes to the Florida Department of Agriculture's website or University of Florida's Bee Lab, they have a website also. If you go to those locations, there are resources there. You can find a list of all the state-approved queen producers. We have one in Melbourne, Greek's Bees. He recently took over a business that was in Merritt Island. I think he's been there about 2 years. So he's a registered queen producer. We have a very close relationship between his company and our club. So if I need to get a bunch of bees and I can't wait to make my own, I can call Greeks.
Is there a favorite species?
I don't have a favorite species. Most people look for an Italian bee. They're typically a gentler bee. They produce a moderate amount of honey. Easy to work with, have a good temperament. Some people like Russian bees. Russian bees have been exposed to varroa mites a lot longer. We have a mite actually came in from Asia. And the bees here domestically in the U.S. hadn't been exposed to the mite that long. Where the Russian bees have been exposed to the mite, they've developed practices to kind of mitigate it in the hive. They also have a history of being temperamental and a little bit more aggressive. They do usually make a little more honey than the Italian bees do, but they're not necessarily as fun to work with. So a backyard beekeeper, you know, they want a quiet, gentle bee. It's the majority.
That's the Asian bee, the one that'll be namaste and bend down. So what kind of hive do you recommend for people who are beginners in this craft?
There's a lot of different applications. You can go on online and look at things. A lot depends upon your objective. I've found doing this, most backyard beekeepers are older adults. And so I really recommend for new beginners, go with 8-frame medium equipment. Your typical package is going to come with 10-frame stuff, a deep box and medium box. But that deep box full of honey can weigh 110 pounds. And if you're lugging them around, it can get, you know, a lot. Whereas an 8-frame medium box is never going to be more than 50 pounds. And it doesn't really matter how many boxes you want to put on there. If your bees keep growing, you just keep stacking boxes. So you may have an extra, you may go 5 or 6 boxes high versus 3 boxes high with deeps, but you're still not picking that 100-pound box up.
Yeah, and so for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with our friend D.C. Padgett, and he's with the South Brevard Beekeepers right here in Brevard. And you know, bees are vital pollinators, right, with fascinated biology, including I've read where they have 5 eyes, and they specialize in wiggle dances. Mm. That's their way of communication.
Yes.
So talk to us about the wiggle dancing.
All right, so there's a waggle dance and a wiggle dance, and a little bit different between the two. You're cutting, splitting hairs. But the bees will go out and locate a nectar source or a pollen source, and they'll come in, and they will actually shake a bee. If they can't get a bee's attention.
It sounds like Caribbean people, shake, shake, shake.
Yeah, it could be.
Pretty much.
Maybe they'll whiny, whiny.
He'll grab a bee and shake the bee and say, hey, and that's kind of where the wiggle comes from. I want to tell you something. There's a really good food source. And then she'll do the waggle dance. And it was discovered that depending upon the direction she's waggling on the frame is the direction from the colony that the bee has to fly. And the duration of her dance is the distance. And so the bees orient to the sun. And you mentioned the 5 eyes. They have 3 ocelli on the top of their head. They're not actually eyes. It's difficult to really describe what they are. But they can see ultraviolet and polarized light. So no matter where the sun's at, through the clouds, they can tell where the sun's at by the polarization of light coming through the clouds. And that lets them navigate regardless. As long as the sun is out somewhere, they can still navigate and find where they want to go.
Yeah. And I was told that bees are supposed to be well hydrated.
Yeah, they need a water source. So we tell that, and that's part of the requirements. If you become a registered beekeeper in the state of Florida, you got to make sure you give a water source to your bees. We don't want them in our neighbors' pools, but they have to have some kind of water source. Yeah.
So I wonder, like, in some countries, of course, we're watching what's happening internationally with wars and stuff. What happens to our little friends, the bees, when they're... Because you don't even have water for some time for the children and the adults in that area. But now we've been told that bees, who are it's vital to our health. Where do they go?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's
like, do they migrate someplace else?
I'm sure they can migrate. As far as the war areas, I don't know, you know, what the environment's like, but to begin with, if they've already found water sources, I would imagine they're closer to the water sources. But they're still being displaced by activities there, which kind of leads me to locally things. There's so much development going on in Brevard County right now. They're clearing land. And it's, to me, it seems like almost every time they clear a lot near me, within a day I get a phone call that they've got bees that have moved into their house. There was a feral colony living in one of those trees in that lot they cleared and sort of displacing the bees, and they're taking off. They're finding other places to go. And bees will go into anything. They're looking for...
So I have heard a nurse said that they had a beehive in the wall of their home.
Yeah, we've done that. They're looking for a place that's dry, dark, typically, and about 3 to 5 gallons in volume is what they're looking to go into. And so there's a lot of that around. As far as walls, we do... Several people in my club will go out and remove bees. As a club, we don't. Individuals, we do. I work with 3 other guys on Mondays and Thursdays. We go around the county. We remove bees. We did 2 this morning. We took bees out of the soffit of a lady's house down in Palm Bay, and we left that one. We went over to another house in Palm Bay and cut a hole in the shed floor and took a client out of the shed floor.
Wow. And, of course, we like to eat, right? We all know that food is... I mean, you try to diet, but then you get a good food and you just can't let it go, right? But bees have 2 stomachs. So how do you prevent bees from overeating or from starving?
Well, we do watch the food sources. So when we go in, we look for 3 things every time we open a beehive. We're looking for mood, brood, and food. I want bees that aren't trying to kill me because I want to have fun doing this.
Right. Yes.
I want to make sure I see evidence of food. I'm not looking for honey. Honey is your winter stores. I want to see open nectar. If I see open nectar in the cells, they've got food. And then I want to find evidence of the queen. So I'm looking for some eggs somewhere. And that tells me everything I need to know. But if I go in there and I've got some packets of honey, but no open food stores, no nectar, I probably need to feed them. And so typically I'll feed a 1-to-1 mixture of sugar water. I may feed them for 2-3 days, may feed them for a week, and just keep monitoring things, make sure they're healthy. Most cases here in Florida where I've been doing this, I haven't had to feed a lot. We did this last February because we had those 2 nights where temperatures got down below freezing, yeah. And we lost a lot of flowers. And so the bees had no food sources for about a month. And we ended up feeding a bunch quite a bit.
Right. And I know the last time you came, we had talked about the bees have smelly feet, and only the queen bees sting, not the males?
Well, all the females sting. The males don't. All females have a stinger.
Well, that's like humans. Those ladies get
pretty much easy.
Some of these ladies, they get to these guys sometimes, you know, at the, yeah. Right? Wouldn't you say? Sometimes men don't really... Danny knows
he's not participating.
The stinger is actually a fascinating organism. Now, the queen stinger is a single unit, like a syringe, it's straight. But the worker bee stinger actually consists of 3 parts, and it's kind of a triangular shape. Now, 1 part is rigid. The other 2 parts are connected to the venom sac, and they oscillate back and forth with tiny barbs on them. So, as that venom sac is pulsing venom, the stinger is driving itself deeper into your skin. As long as that stinger's in there, the deeper and deeper it goes. So you want to get it out. Now, they tell people to kind of scrape it out with a credit card or the hive tool, your fingernail. If you got to fish around in your pocket to get something to scrape it out, it's been in there too long anywhere. Just any way you can, just get it out. If you have to squeeze it to get it out, you're going to squirt some extra venom in there. But get it out as fast as you can.
Yeah. And I read where bees, their sense of smell is stronger than a dog?
Probably is. I mean, they can detect something. If you've had bees, we tell people this too when we do removals. If you've had bees in a cavity in your house and you don't scrape all the comb off and cover it with a good odor barrier of paint, typically kills is pretty good, bees will find that same spot. They can find it from a long ways off, and you'll
it's
have
very nice. Yeah. Right.
And for listeners who are tuning in, DC brought honey for us. And of course, we know that it takes nectar from roughly 2 million flowers to produce 1 pound of honey?
Yeah, the numbers are really weird. You know, a single bee in her lifetime, bees last about 5 weeks in the summertime, a bee in her lifetime will not produce a single drop of honey.
But you know what's weird, though? When you go to restaurants sometime, when people are not educated about, you know, grape jelly and apple jelly and the work that goes into that, and then you see a little honey, and ever since you've been on a show, I've paid attention to honey. And I would see it, and I'm like, oh, God, that's going in the trash. And it hurts your heart. You know, so tell us a little bit of you know, for people who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today, how soon do you remove honey from a hive after you set up a new colony?
There's periods in the year when you can harvest. Like right now, there's very little to harvest. They're still growing up. So location's important with a lot of things. Where I'm at in Palm Bay, there's two times a year I can possibly harvest honey. I could get some stuff in June. Depends on how the spring flows go. I usually don't focus on that. But my biggest harvest is November. Brazilian pepper starts blooming in September, and that produces a lot of honey. And it's usually capped and ready to come out in November. So my main harvest is November. If you live beachside, live on Merritt Island, you can really get three harvests on those areas because you got up in Merritt Island, there's a lot of mango growing up there. You can pull mango, you can get sea grape, and then you're still going to get some Brazilian pepper.
We have sea grapes in our yard and mangoes.
Okay.
Wow.
But you need a lot.
Yeah, oh, okay.
You need
I was going to go start looking for honey.
Yeah, you need this million flowers.
So the bees are really hard-working pollinators because the honeybees pollinate roughly one-third of the world's crops and vegetables. Talk to our listeners, DJ, a little bit, DC, a little bit about that, because people go to the grocery store, they buy their fruits and vegetables without giving a thought about who's picking them, you know, where the honey's coming from, where apples are coming from. I mean, crops are so important, and a lot of people don't give that extra thought into when they buy a bottle of honey or something.
And that's kind of interesting, too, because people don't think about how the crops get pollinated, and the beekeeping industry has kind of merged with a lot of your crop builders. The biggest paying crop for pollination is actually California almonds. And you cannot keep beehives on the grounds where they grow almond trees all year. They won't survive. So the almond growers actually have bees shipped in, usually the end of January. They'll stay for about a month pollinating almonds. And they leave that and they travel around the country. Some beekeepers will go hit pollinate almonds. They'll move up into Washington, Oregon State. They'll do apples and pears. They'll go across up into Massachusetts, they'll pollinate blueberries and cranberries. They'll come down into Virginia, Washington, D.C. area, they'll pollinate cherries. And then they'll bring some down into Georgia and they'll pollinate peaches.
Wow.
So the same bees.
Isn't that, it's fantastic. It's fascinating.
They go all around the country.
Even North Dakota, I heard, they go to North.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they go all over the country. And because pollination contracts are paid by the strength of a colony, a colony that winters in Florida is stronger than a colony that winters in Georgia because we have no real winter. So I can't get anybody to tell me exactly what the numbers are, but in excess of 300,000 beehives will come into central southern Florida starting in September and October. They try to come down here when Brazilian pepper is blooming so they can stock up on the pepper and the beekeepers don't have to feed them. But then in January, February time frame, when pollination contracts start, they've got full-strength beehives shipping out to California, and they get paid premium.
Yeah, and you know, nowadays, a lot of people who are cutting back on sugar, they're putting honey in everything. And the Brazilian pepper, but the thing is, a lot of people are cutting those down because they grow so wild.
Yeah, I don't expect they're going to be successful because we know I've had my backyard. I love the pepper honey. I love the fact that my bees bring it in. I did not like that tree in my backyard. I tried to move it several times. Finally had to get
Yeah, we had to cut, do a lot of cook. Their roots, they're really deep. So, you know, when you take the honeys, you get sting sometimes. So how does people prevent getting stung by the bees when you're trying to remove the honey?
There's a couple different things you can do. The main thing is, and I get stung a lot because I am an aggressive beekeeper, and I don't like being stung. But I'll usually take four or five stings on my hands before I put gloves on. I like being able to feel the frames. If you take your time, use some smoke, be calm, no fast movements, try not to pinch bees. Most people can actually work them without being stung. And then to remove honey without being stung, actually, there's a device called an escape board. It's a little maze. You lift the top box, usually where the honey's at. You take the top box off. You put this board on there with the maze on it. Put the top box on. And the bees can go through the maze, but they can't figure out how to get back in the maze. So the first time I'd seen these things, I didn't really believe in it. But I tried one about 5 years ago just to see what happens. I put it on, came back the next day. There was three bees in that box where there was 5,000 the day before.
Wow.
So using escape boards is awesome. You can put that on, and when you harvest the box, you're less likely to get stung. You're also less likely to bring bees in your house while you're processing your honey.
Yeah. And what is the lifespan of these bees?
4 to 6 weeks. Depends on a lot of things going on. You know, when there's a heavy nectar flow going on, the bees are working harder. They're going to live about 4 weeks. Not quite so much, 6 weeks.
Yeah. And, you know, you're a beekeeper, and you have over 200 people in the club, the South Brevard Beekeepers. How do you guys contribute to the health, the overall health of the bees?
Well, we go into boxes on a regular basis. I try to tell people, I recommend at least every 10 days, open your boxes. You're checking for those three things. We're also looking for pests. The two biggest pests we see are the vromite, small hive beetles. And so there's methods of treating for vromites. It's like a tick that gets on a bee and it transfers diseases. They can destroy a colony. So we have to monitor for them. There's different ways to monitor for that. And the other one is a small hive beetle. They get in there and they'll lay eggs and they'll infest the colony.
A beetle?
Yeah, it's a small beetle. It's called a small hive beetle.
I'll squish him if I see him.
Yeah. Not indigenous. It came in from South Africa on some bees there. And again, the South African bees have actually come up with ways to deal with these. Our bees haven't really... So we use different methods. We put traps in the box to try to catch the small hive beetles. Strong colonies is the key. So I also tell people, if you haven't got bees on 70% of the frames in your box, you probably need to make the box smaller. Because if they're trying to protect that real estate that they can't protect, that allows other pests to come in and cause problems.
So somebody should really write a book about the psychology of bees.
Right.
If that hasn't already been done before. Because it is a brilliant ecosystem, as well as
intelligent.
The government could learn so much.
Yeah.
and they're extremely practical. There's something that we kind of joke about this. The boy bees, the drone bees, don't do anything within the hive. They don't gather food. They run around eating.
They're teenagers.
They actually, but they'll bump into worker bees trying to get worker bees to feed them. They'll fly out to mate with the queen, and in the process of mating, they die. And so when your weather changes in the wintertime and your conditions are smaller, not as much nectar coming in, not as much daylight, they stop making drones. And in fact, in some places, we don't see it quite much here, but you go north, you will, they actually kick them out. They kick the drones out of the hive and just let them all die off.
So, DC, I would imagine that you all have classes where you're teaching high school students, even elementary and middle school, about bees, because when you think about it, it is something that people don't think about, but here's this honey that you brought for us that probably came from your own hive.
Yes.
Right? So why do you think there's, you know, so many people in not just in Florida, but in the United States, a lot of people don't want to delve into, like, history. The history of the bees, it's fascinating. We've been using ginger and honey forever, to cure a sore throat.
Right.
Right? So talk to us a little bit of how do you bridge that gap between people who don't want to learn about it, but, you know, you try to teach them.
We have an outreach. Bonnie Charles is a member of our club, and she handles outreach. She does school presentations on a regular basis. She does 2 or 3 a month. I've done some stuff for homeschoolers. If a homeschool group wants to do something with bees, I'll actually set up a screen tent on the property next to our apiary, and I'll move a beehive right behind the screen tent, and the kids can get inside the screen tent. I'll usually grab one kid and one parent to go out there and open the beehive with me and talk to them about the bees.
You find that the children are very receptive once they get started.
Yeah. And by moving the beehive, there's the odds of having any aggressive bees aren't there, because there's a phenomenon. If you take part of a beehive and you move it on the same property, all the bees that have flown before are actually going to fly back to where the box used to be. So the ones that are in that box, what we call house bees, and house bees are usually not very aggressive. They're just running around doing their chores they typically do within a house. So it makes it safer for the kids, a better environment. And then every year, typically the last Saturday of February, we do an all-day bee school. You come out, the people, they build their own beehive to take home. They spend 2 hours in the yard working with the beehives in the yard. We spin honey. You take home a jar of honey. We have lunch and have a good time.
Yeah. Do you package honey here in Brevard from all your bee source honey or elsewhere as well?
I just do my own. I'm a cottage industry. I just package my own honey at my house. Occasionally, we'll do stuff for the club, like the apiaries at the church behind the club. And some of the people in the club can't actually have bees. We have 3 people that come on a regular basis that live in a restricted area where they can't have their own beehives. But in order to give them an opportunity, a couple of times a year, I'll pull honey from the club beehives, and we'll take it into church and spin it out in the kitchen at the church, and they can take some honey home.
So for our listeners who are tuning in, it's fascinating speaking with DC Padgett. So DC, where can people find information to join the club or maybe come and watch what you all are doing and observe all the stuff going on with the beehives? Give our listeners your website or Facebook page or how to contact you all.
We have a website, southriverbeekeepers.com. We're on Facebook, South River Beekeepers. And people can call me. My phone number is everywhere. It's 321-506-4652.
Yeah.
I usually answer when I can. The last several days, though, I took 17 calls Saturday for people with swarms moving in their homes.
Yeah.
It's the season.
And what happens if there's a hurricane with these bees?
We strap them down. We usually set our beehives up on some concrete blocks and some 4x4s. And so each beehive is going to weigh between 60 and 100 pounds. See, if you got 4 or 5 beehives on a single stand, if you strap them all together with the concrete blocks, that's going to hold it down. You've got some significant weight and are low to the ground. They'll handle it pretty good.
Yeah.
The biggest thing, though, after a hurricane or a storm is to get any moisture in the hive out, and you don't want them sitting directly over top of a wet pool. That's going to cause molding. It's also going to raise the humidity, and bees don't like humidity.
Yeah. And I would think the way that the beekeepers care for the honeybees will determine the outcome of what type of honey you get as well. Because bees who are cared for properly and kindly with love and a lot of empathy and compassion, I would think that the honey would taste better.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. And, you know, I'm sure the attitude of the beekeeper has got something to do with the hive.
Yeah, the attitude of the beekeeper. That is
true. Well, and there's a whole, again, a whole psychology of that. There's a gentleman who wrote a book about that. It's called Well Done. It's about going in with the right attitude when you're dealing with training animals specifically. But it's a corporate leadership program that could certainly be implemented with the beekeeper part. You have to go in with a kind of a pure heart, if you will, all of a sudden.
Yeah, somebody told
how
me that.
Fascinating.
Somebody told me that even when you smoke, if you smoke around the beehives, it's not good for the bees as well.
Well, that kind of smoke is not good for anybody.
Right, I know. And here our little tiny bees are getting suffocated by it too. So, DC, if you met someone and they ask you to tell you in 30 seconds or not why they should care about the bees, not just care about eating Splenda and Sweet and Low and switch into honeybees, but there's a science behind this honey that's been around for centuries. What would you tell them? Like, say, hey, before you take that teaspoon of honey and put it in your coffee, tea, or lemonade or whatever, let me tell you a little bit about bees. What would you tell them?
Well, it took, for that teaspoon of honey, it probably took 15,000 bees their lifetime to make that teaspoon of honey over the course of like 4 weeks. And it's kind of amazing, too. We know this, and yet I can have an empty box on top of the beehive, and Brazilian pepper starts to flow. And 1 week later, that empty box has got 45 pounds of honey in it. Those 70,000 bees in that box brought in 45 pounds of honey in 1 week.
From Brazilian peppers. I have more respect for the Brazilian peppers. Because, there's so much of that around, and people don't understand.
Well, and people destroy it, and they don't realize that, once again, it's another natural resource that can be utilized for good for the humanity. Right.
So before we go off air, any plants offhand that our listeners should be thinking about planting in the yard? Because we just had that big freeze and a lot of people lost plants. And what kind of plants are bee friendly?
That's a good question. I'm not into the plant part of the thing.
Just Brazilian peppers.
Brazilian peppers, yeah, I'm into that. But yeah, just talk to your garden place you're buying your plants from. They have a list of stuff that's bee friendly. Also, bear in mind, a single flower is not going to do a whole lot. It's going to do something. I mean, the more you can plant, the better off you're going to be.
Think about it, right?
Yeah.
When you're environmentally conscious, right? Yeah. Then you think about other things as well.
And typically, the nursery growers know they actually take a whole class and get certified in native plants and how to make sure that.
And where can we find the honey so that people could get buy the honey, purchase it? And I'm sure, with the church, I'm sure that you help them as well.
Yeah, they can contact the club. I mean, they can call me either way. I've usually got quite a bit of honey, but there's other members in the club that sell honey also. There's quite a few of us.
Oh, so okay. Wonderful.
Fantastic. Well, we'll make sure we get these pictures up on on our Facebook pages and so forth. And great information. Once again, DC, thanks for joining us and educating us on the wonderful life of bees. We're going to take a quick break and listen to our sponsors of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And we'll be right back with these right after these messages.
Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture.
Baba Senior Care Outreach. They are a private, non-for-profit organization committed to serving the aging community with compassion and respect. They recognize and honor seniors as individuals, and they are dedicated to promoting their health, safety, dignity, and overall quality of life. Please join them on May 23rd at the Wickham Park in Melbourne, Florida, for a BSO Senior Walk-In Show. Well, they will have vendors, great resources, and information to provide for seniors. So please check out babaseniouroutreach.org for more information.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads, Jasmine Sir Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Choctaw Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Choctaw Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Choctaw Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Choctaw Financial Group today.
Listeners, welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Bigi on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere. Ms. Ellen just gave them the dial to get online.
That's right, 1510 WWBC.com. You can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, we share it on all of our social media and our website, which is SitaMediaInc.com.
Right. And our second segment is going to be just as fascinating as our first segment. Boy, talking about the bees, I feel like I want to become a beekeeper myself. Anne Morose is here. She's an RN, BSN, SCRN, and all kind of numbers behind her name, letters, NCBC. And basically what she's achieved the status of a stroke-certified registered nurse, an integrative nurse coach, board certified with dementia. And you all know that that's near and dear to my heart. And Anne has done so much in her life about teaching people in nursing, holistic healthcare, and so many things. And I especially like what she's doing with as a co-president for the North Brevard Democratic Party. And we just met Saturday night. And I thought, what a great advocate. A well-rounded person who's not afraid to speak up for the good of humanity and the good of the citizens, not just in Brevard, but all over the world in the United States. And I just wanted to welcome Ann and Morose to our show. Welcome, and thank you for being part of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Well, thank you for the invitation,
yes.
Sita.
So you've done so many things in your life with your career as a nurse, an advocate for just about every system in the health, in the body, and everything else. What made you decide to become an activist?
I started when I was a little girl, actually. As a small child, my father was very involved in Maryland politics. And he would take me to canvass and campaign meetings with his city councilman, William Donald Schaefer. And it started on the local level. And then William Donald Schaefer was a very famous political figure in Maryland politics. And he went from city councilman to mayor and then to governor of Maryland. And my father also was on various committees, governor's committees. My father was an educator also. And my parents were very in support of anything for public education, because my father was a public education principal, and also anything to do with healthcare. And then that kind of sparked my interest in politics early.
Yes, yes. The thing with you too, Ann, is that you, as you went about your journey on God's magnificent planet, you believe in so many holistic techniques to help the human body, things like meditation and mindfulness and all that. So what a great balance, in addition to your nursing career and watching your dad lead by example, you're very spiritual.
Yes. I, after being in the allopathic medical field, there are so many treatments that are for the benefit of all of us, but there are still gaps that are missing. And I got really into the more holistic, from energy techniques to meditation to mindfulness, because, okay, we can do different techniques and treatments for the body, but as we were saying with the bees and everything else, the whole psychological, it's our body is whole. It's just not physical, but we're looking at physical, mental, spiritual, and all of that. And if we want to heal our body, that helps to complete our focus.
Right. And when you worked in El Paso, Texas, you worked with a lot of people from various backgrounds. And what an honor and a pleasure that must have been for you, because your life experiences, all that experience that you learned with multiculturalism, it helped you to stay now as an activist and give back more.
Oh, definitely. Learning the different culture, learning what I came from a middle class family, but I really worked with people that were very dirt poor. I worked 3 miles from the Mexican border. And when I first moved to Texas along because of my husband's job, I was asked if I would be interested in assuming responsibilities over an independent school district for their health services, which I had never done before. I knew 2 words of Spanish, that many. And so, and it was under a large grant under the University of Texas, and it was meant to establish school-based medical clinics along the Mexican border. And we were able to bring in medical students, dental students, social work students, nursing students. And into that, I also expanded my holistic practices, because I found out that there was a big spiritual aspect too in the Hispanic culture. They had their own healers. And I had trained in a technique called healing touch. It's like the laying of hands, but and I was able to use my medical knowledge as well as bring in some of those techniques, and it worked out beautifully.
Yeah,
and,
well, you know, in those cultures, a thing like aloe, which, you know, I know so many people that have the aloe plant in their home or in their yard, but my mother used to swear you peel that aloe and you rub it on an itch or spot, dark spot, and it goes away. But you tell my kids to peel an aloe, they're like, ew, I'm going to get poked, you know. But in those cultures, plants and herbs things like that, they've seen the benefits of it over time. So that you're right, they incorporate it into our medical and nursing practices here. Now, after that, you moved to South Florida and you became active. I didn't realize that Dave Ehrenberg, I love him. I met him quite a few times. I see him on CNN a lot these days. He's aged, but he's still awesome with knowing about the law, the state attorney. And you worked on a lot of campaigns because you cared about healthcare, number one, just like all of us who care about the ACA. And we understood at that time that there were a lot of people that could write a check for healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
There were many in the bottom that could, that they qualified for Medicaid based on their income. And thank God we have that. But then there were the people in the middle, in the gap, could not qualify for Medicaid or pay for COBRA on their job if they lost a job or quit, and they couldn't write a check. And so you got involved with the campaigns, mainly because of healthcare. So talk to our listeners a little bit about that.
Well, being the nurse, and at the time when I, during the run-up to the ACA or Obamacare, I had two beautiful grandbabies that were born. And they were, of course, they needed neonatal care for a little while, and there were a lot of expenses that we found not covered by insurance because of their mother's stay in the hospital and them being in preemie intensive care. So during the run-up to Obamacare, they were asking for families to write in their stories. And when I found out how much of a hospital bill that was a result of the babies being born, I thought, well, these were beautiful little babies. I'm going to write in.
Yeah.
So I did, and it was called The Story. And so I got home, wrote a paragraph about their situation, and it got picked up by the national press.
Oh, mazel tov.
And we were asked to take our story, and their story was part of the hearings for the run-up to Obamacare.
Wow.
And
that's very touching, Anne, because you expose yourself and your family for the greater good, you know? And you also did some work with pain management, I read. And, you know, pain is cultural. Pain is emotional. Pain is spiritual. Pain could be, as some people, when they have pain and they get depressed, maybe they could join the beekeepers when they get a little depressed.
That's right.
But talk to us a little bit about that, because you also specialize in pain management in nursing, and you became the chair of the Government Relations Committee at the national level for the American Association of Pain Management. How many people live in that one body? You're doing a lot of stuff, man.
Well, as my husband moved me across multiple states, I decided to take up a different discipline of nursing. And I'm a very energetic person, and I like to do new projects. So when I got into pain management, when I go into a different specialty of nursing, I also try to get active in their national organizations. And I was very fortunate to be on the forefront of pain management nurses getting certified also. And I got exposed to the nursing experts in the field. And since I had already had some background in political activities, I decided to join the Government Relations Committee and then worked my way up to being chair of the committee, the Government Relations Committee on the national level to represent the nurses. And since I grew up in Maryland, my father was also a history teacher. And that was also part of my upbringing, that he took me to Washington and I went through all the different different museums and so forth in Washington. And I had thought about becoming a lobbyist at one time.
And you would have been great at it because you are a people person. And not only that, you did some work with strokes, which, you know, a lot of us are watching relatives who have diabetes and hypertension and heart disease. And a lot of that is genetic, but a lot is preventable with diet, exercise and lifestyle changes as well. So talk to us a little bit about the information you gathered along the way being a stroke advocate as well.
Well, again, when I did another move to Florida.
Every state she moved to, she did something.
Actually, I did two specialties in Florida because I've moved twice to Florida. But yes, I took a position with the American Heart Association. And again, I was very, very fortunate to be on the ground floor of establishing stroke centers. And through the American Heart Association, they had just created a database for quality improvement, which assisted hospitals not only to collect data on stroke, but to help them establish primary and comprehensive stroke centers. So through South Florida, I covered half the state and developed the whole territory to bring in these programs so they could create or establish their primary and comprehensive stroke center. So it's just like you go in, have chest pain, and you go in to the hospital with a heart attack. The same now, we help to set up these centers for stroke alerts. So when you go in and you have signs and symptoms of a stroke, we have a whole stroke team in these stroke centers, and they come right away to treat your stroke, because time is brain. And there are also special thrombolytic therapies that will increase your chances of survival if you get these medications within three to 4.5 hours. So I've worked across the board with over 90 some hospitals in South Florida to help them develop these programs and to get certified under the Joint Commission, which is national certification for hospitals.
It's wonderful to know you, because I mean, for a person to be to contribute to the creation of the Florida Stroke Registry and the Florida Stroke Bill legislation, that's huge, and we thank you for that.
Well, since I was already involved with the pain management nurses, because I helped to write some of the legislation in collaboration with the American Pain Society, it was like that's how I got into my involvement with stroke legislation with the Florida. I was on the ground floor of the beginning of the Florida Stroke Registry, and every stroke hospital in Florida now is part of the Florida Stroke Registry, and I've been on the steering committee with that, and to improve stroke care in all of Florida.
Next thing, you'll be taking D.C. to open up his beekeeping situation right there in Tallahassee. Sure. Talk to them about it, and he should go and talk to them with the FDA and all that. But you know, no wonder on Saturday when you walked away to go speak with, I think you went to speak with Jamie Roskin, and your husband was beaming with pride, mm-hmm. and he says, "I can't stop her." And I was like, whoa, look at that. But that brings, because he knew that you wanted to speak with him and you wanted to speak with Mr. Vindman. But, you know, that brings us to today in where you are the, Miss Ann Moreau's, where you are the co-president of the North Brevard Democratic Club. And you're participating and advocating for great causes. You're also helping to build a community of a network of people here and teach them why the importance of voting. And I also like that, when you get involved in politics, you can influence the community and the decisions that legislators make. And with your extensive background, I think you're doing wonderful. So talk to us a little bit how you all created the club, and take it from there and tell us a little bit more about the club and all the networking mm-hmm. that you're doing to get people. Doesn't matter if they're registered as a Republican or a Democrat or an independent, they're human beings who want the same thing we all want at the end of the day: food, a job, a place to live, education for their kids, and things like that. So tell us how you're bridging that with people.
Well, first of all politics is local.
Yes.
And that's where you build your coalitions, and that's how you get to the higher, from the local, the state, and the national levels. And through my experience in healthcare, I was fortunate. I actually started more on the national level and took it to the state and then the local level. And as soon as I moved to Brevard County, I actually looked up the local Democratic group. And when they found out what my background was, I cannot take credit in creating it. It's been around for quite a number of years. And I recently took over the part of the leadership, and we work more in northern Brevard County, and it's like Port St. John, Titusville, Mims area. And we meet on a monthly basis. We meet the fourth Monday of the month, and we bring in speakers, the local leaders, as well as candidates. We do postcarding. We encourage canvassing. We work alongside with the local District 1 DEC. And we even do a judges panel. And then we stream that. And we were, I think, the first group to start streaming our meetings. So if people can't make our meetings, they can stream it on Facebook.
Yeah, and I think you told me how many people were at the last one online.
Yeah, we can. We have had 500 up to 900 people watching our stream.
That's wonderful, Anne. And, you know, getting involved in politics, it empowers individuals to fight against perceived injustices, mm-hmm. It teach people about their rights. It also builds network, and it's a good for the community. It helps people in the community as well. You're teaching people in that area, not just parents, but you're also helping the children, because see, you all do a lot of hands-on things as well in that area.
My biggest concern right now is immunizations. Being a nurse, and as a baby, I almost died from the measles. And the measles in particular, the vaccine has saved so many lives. And I'm very concerned that there is going to be more cases of measles, which is a highly contagious disease. So that is one of my big
pet
concerns.
Peeves, yes.
Right.
Well, we have a minute left. If you would like to give the website or the contact information, if someone lives in the North Brevard area and they would like to join your club, this would be the time for you to give that.
Yes, it's North Brevard Dem. It's North Brevard Dem Club at gmail.com.
Yeah.
And then you can find us on facebook.com. It's the official North Brevard Dems.
All right. And may I add that many people who get involved in politics, it doesn't matter whether it's education or healthcare, jobs, opportunities, or maybe they want to talk about immigration reform, they do so because they believe that it's our fundamental responsibility to help maintain this beautiful democracy that we have here in the United States of America. And make no mistake that this is the greatest country, and we want to keep it that way. And everybody in the studio is not into that. But may I add that maybe you can have DC come and speak at your club one day about the bees. We're good for networking here on our show.
We are so
well.
Good about that. Well, again, another fantastic episode of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us, whether online or whether you're listening to us after the show, of our downloads. It means the world to us that you're participating in community radio right here at 1510 WWBC. Thanks for tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We'll see you next week.